I am a consultant with JAS Global Advisors, supporting ICANN on the Trademark Clearinghouse project. With me on the call from ICANN are Francisco Arias, Karen Lentz, and Margie Millam. Participation for this call is taking place through Adobe Connect at icann.adobeconnect.com/TMCH, where you can view the slides and enter the queue to ask questions. Just a few housekeeping items. We'd like to ask that everyone please mute your phone by hitting *6. To unmute, you can hit *7. Please use Adobe Connect where possible, and you can raise your hand using the user icon. These are fairly routine statements. We've been through these many calls before, so declaring interest, bidders should make it explicit that they are bidders. We will continue our process of following up via email outside the call. Participants can use the distribution list for discussion and a reminder that this call is being recorded. We have a full agenda this evening. We'll take about 5 minutes for our intro and housekeeping. We'd like to have about a 20-minute recap and discussion on T1 data locations, another 15 minutes to recap and discuss a data classification, 15 minutes to discuss the critical transactions of the clearinghouse that are externally facing, and then another 30 minutes to discuss data protocols with a 5-minute wrap at the end. By way of background, the purpose of this group is to provide advice on key clearinghouse processes and high-level implementation issues that are technical in their nature. It is not our purpose to design solutions. The goal is for ICANN to deliver a set of business requirements to the service providers that are selected through the clearinghouse's RFI process. The technical discussion track has allocated more time around three interrelated areas of discussion spread across multiple calls: data locations, data access, and communication protocols. As this is the third call, we've discussed many of these issues before, and people should be at least passingly familiar with our topics at this point. Anything I should add before we move into the meat of the discussion? All right. Data location has been a very, very hot topic on the mailing list. And to summarize, I want to make sure that we're fairly summarizing the issue to date. So the rights holders seem to have concerns about the aggregation of marked data through the clearinghouse, that aggregation could expose brand protection strategies or other competitive intelligence. It might expose gaps infection approaches being used, and it may expose various kinds of phishing risks against mark holders or rights holders. At the same time, registries and registrars have expressed significant concerns about being mandated to use a solution which might not share enough information or data to ensure appropriate levels of uptime and performance, which exposes a risk of a third party affecting the registry or registrar's business success, and also could introduce a single point of failure in the form of a clearinghouse operator for a new GTLD launch. Have we correctly and accurately captured the issues to date? And are there any comments, questions, or concerns people might want to bring up around this?
Okay, so this is Karen Lentz speaking. I'll open up the queue now if there's anyone who wants to speak on this topic.
So, Tom?
Yes, I just wanted to, I guess, clarify. I think the issue is not so much the aggregate. There's certainly concerns about the aggregation of data, but it's, the concern is really distributing the data outside of the clearinghouse itself, which I think is a concern we're hearing a lot. I don't think anyone's opposed, you know, opposed to the concept of the clearinghouse, which is obviously an aggregation function.
Okay, fair point. That probably is, that can be clarified. That was my intent when I wrote the slides. Other comments or concerns? Are there any other areas of concern that we've not appropriately captured at this point on the data location issue? All right, then I'm going to go ahead. We'll go ahead and advance from here if there are no further comments on data location. Our second issue of this evening is data access and confidentiality. To capture the general consensus from previous calls, there seemed to be general support and that the model we proposed in our original documents is appropriate, with some extensions to help more fully identify the parties who might interact with the clearinghouse and the classes of data that may be housed within the clearinghouse. In this context, we also noted that some of the contents from the trademark claims notice, as specified in the AGB, may also be exposed in other ways by people who are gaming the system. And if we are going to legitimately distribute the trademark claims notices as specified in the AGB, some of the concerns that have been raised by mark holders about aggregation being distributed may also be occurring. Are there any observations, comments, or questions about that issue at this point? Tom?
Yeah, I don't think the display of a single claims notice is necessarily of concern to trademark holders. I think the method at which the claims data is made available, it could lend itself to data mining, which I think is what the concern is. But I don't sense there's a concern with the fact that we're displaying more than just the trademark to the registrant or potential registrant. It's more of a data mining issue about whether or not the mechanism we're using allows people to discover other information about other claims that exist. That makes sense.
It does. Other comments?
This is John McElwain. I would agree with that. I think that the concern is that the data will reside in a form that can be accessed by individuals that might mine it for purposes that are illegal.
So, hi, this is Francisco. So if the data were only reside on the registries or registrars, depending on what's the decision, is that an issue? Is the data necessary to display the trademark notice?
But I think it's an issue that there needs to be a balance between protecting confidentiality and the, as been discussed on the list, the ability for the system to function efficiently and have good service levels that everybody's satisfied with. So we need to balance, you know, the fact that a group of data that could be used inappropriately and is very, very valuable, you don't want to obviously make thousands of different copies of that data and send it out. But also there needs to be some aspect or acknowledgement that there is some functional requirements that might dictate more than one location. I think I would be in favor of the data just residing at the Trademark Clearinghouse as long as we could get around the concerns of service level issues.
So this is Francisco again. So the concern that Jeff and others have raised about having the data only reside on the clearinghouse is that that will make the clearinghouse the single point of failure for all the new ETLDs, at least during the Sunrise and the IP claims period. I guess we could require very high, we could have a very high service level agreement with the clearinghouse, but still we are making that provider the weak link, let's say, in the chain of the domain name industry, at least for new ETLDs for a period of time.
Francisco, I think that summarizes the point quite well. I, as an attorney, don't know the risks or the difficulty it might be in meeting certain service level requirements by the Trademark Clearinghouse. And just anecdotally, you know, plenty of businesses, my firm as one, we're up virtually all the time. We've had very little downtime in my experience. And so I don't see it as an impossibility, but I would defer to people with much more relevant technical expertise.
This is Tom. I guess the challenge with distributing data is not only a data mining issue, but keeping the data current and in sync with the master database. So the concern is registries might in fact cache the data in some way and prevent the updating of the data, in which case it might not be current.
Thanks, Tom. So you're saying we have two issues. One is the issue mentioned before about the possibility of data mining or abusing the data, and the other is that the caching by the registries or registrars of the information could make the information to go stale. So this is a second issue that you are raising?
Correct. Right. Yeah. How do we keep the data current across all the registries?
Okay.
Francisco, John McElwain again. Is this something that could be posed to the potential folks that are interested in operating a Trademark Clearinghouse to see whether certain high-level service-level agreements and data updating can be accomplished by some sort of, you know, request for information to them to kind of get the opinion of those who would actually be operating these or potentially operating the Trademark Clearinghouse?
Hi, James Mitchell here. Hey, the word abuse is thrown around a lot. I just wanted to clarify what's meant by abuse. Now, there's been one example in the past where somebody's mentioned, you know, ability to, for, I don't know, anybody, I guess, to identify all of, say, IBM's marks. However, is the ability for somebody to figure out all marks with a certain class or anything like that. And I guess the line of I'm going down is what liberty do we have with changing the contents in the claims notice? And is there a way that we can have some information in the registries enough to enable enable the registrant claims notice and yet have other information in the trademark clearinghouse, which, you know, we can offload that's not for the registration process but still there for potential registrants?
This is Francisco. Sorry, John, I didn't answer to you before. I was checking with Karen on this issue. So this is something that we have discussed with the potential providers. But we also think this is an issue that needs to be discussed between all the potential people implicated on this issue, meaning also the registries and registrars, since they are also part of the equation here. So what I'm trying to say, we need to discuss this not just with the potential clearinghouse providers, but also with the registries and registrars.
Yes, Marty.
I just have a question, and I apologize. I may not have been on the prior call, but the statement that says that the exposure of content from the trademark claims notice is likely to expose the information that mark holders are concerned about, can someone explain to me that concern? Because I thought the information that's listed in the trademark claims notice is publicly available information that's part of the trademark record. So I'm just curious what's unique about what goes into the trademark claims notice that causes a concern for the trademark holders.
Do any of the representatives of mark holders wish to speak on that, or would they like me to go ahead and take a stab at it? I think that mark holders are concerned that while individual records would be generally public, the aggregated records of many jurisdictions might not be quite so readily available, and thus it might lower the cost of getting that information. However, I'll go ahead and recognize Tom Barrett.
Yeah, the issue is, I understand it, that, you know, there's actually what I would call a hierarchy of brand protection strategies that trademark owners follow. At one level, you know, what brands they decide to file as trademarks at the PTOs obviously reflects a certain level of priority of what they want to protect. When they come to the clearinghouse, you know, the subset of those trademarks that they decide to actually apply to the clearinghouse to is yet another level of insight in terms of which of their registered trademarks they decide to protect. And which of those, and then you go down one level more, and which of those marks that get authenticated that they decide to validate and protect as defensive registrations during sunrise, I think yet again gives you more insight about which of their trademark portfolio they're caring to protect. And so I think, you know, visibility to those subsets of what is inherently a publicly available information is I think where the concern comes from.
Isn't that risk already out there, because there are companies that aggregate that data, like, for example, a Thompson & Thompson as an example?
Well, I built databases for Thompson & Thompson. It costs money to do an owner search within one jurisdiction or 20 or 30 different jurisdictions. So it's a very costly exercise to find out how a trademark owner is filing across the world. But again, they point out what subset of their portfolio they decide to protect for claims and for sunrise is even more competitive intelligence, because it's not going to be all their trademarks. They're gonna hone in on their most valuable trademarks for the clearinghouse.
Hong.
Well, okay. For this issue, we had discussion at last call on technology. The primary concern is on aggregation of trademark registration information, not trademark registration information per se. As the colleague mentioned, that these information from PTO is actually open to everyone to access. Well, at last slice, at the slice you just showed, there's something about the competitive intelligence about a gap in protection approaches. This is actually the concern that already have been voiced at last call. But I think about another issue from the same perspective. That is, for the TMCH, the information contained is not limited to trademark registration information. From the trademark registration certificate, we can see the name of registration, the trademark, the address of the registrant, the date of the period of registration. These have been included and publicly available at PTO website. But there's something additional to that in TMCH database, such as the email address, the telephone number. This part of information is not available, it's not publicly available at PTO website, but it's available at TMCH. So are we going to separate these two kind of information, or are we talk about the whole information as a package? If we want to analogize the PTO availability of information, probably we need to see the difference between PTO database and TMCH database. Okay, back to you.
There's some discussion going on in the chat room right now. Tom.
Hi, this is Tom Barrett again. I guess we're trying to resist repeating information from past conferences, but there has been, I think, quite a bit of discussion about how the claims process might work in a way that avoids abuse of the data. And there's basically a high frequency of activity for registrars to check to see if a requested domain name matches something in the clearinghouse. And that only needs to look at the domain name string itself versus what the registrar is asking for, and doesn't need to include any other owner information. So I think that can safely be distributed. It's when a match is found and a claims notice needs to be generated that the clearinghouse will have to provide more detailed information on that one record. And again, I don't think there's any reason to distribute that to registries.
thanks, Tom. That's what I was, this is Margie. I was thinking the same thing, that information that a claims notice was sent out or something is not something that would be distributed. At least doesn't seem like there'd be a reason to distribute it.
Are there other comments? Go ahead, Francisco.
I'm sorry. I was just going to comment about something that James said about them, where there is the need to show them the prima holder information in the notice to the potential registrant. And Karen was saying that could be an option, but there is a need for the potential registrant to contact the prima holder. And James said one possible way to do that is to use the clearinghouse. I guess the clearinghouse as a proxy between the two parties. Sounds to me like a potential solution.
Are there other comments we should be? What is the feeling of if we take contact data out of the claims notice and provide a proxy through the clearinghouse, would that address the contact data concern? Tom, to respond to your chat comment, I believe that Francisco has asked, and I am asking, whether providing some mechanism through the clearinghouse, whether it's a link or some other proxy, providing that rather than providing direct contact information, that is the... That is the proposal, or not the proposal is too strong a term, that is the question we're asking, whether that's adequate to address the concern.
So we have Christine in the queue?
Sorry, yeah, Christine.
Yeah, my suggestion, my thought is that, you know, if you have a particular, because it's my thought that I don't think every trademark owner is going to care if their, you know, contact information is provided so that they can be reached. Certainly some will. And I suspect that if you leave that an option for the mark holders who enter that mark into the database, would you prefer to use the Trademark Clearinghouse as a proxy if someone wants to contact you, or do you just want your information to be displayed? I mean, that could just be an option that the clearinghouse provides when someone enters their mark.
So are there, Tom?
Well, I guess as the one requirement that I think has been difficult here is the requirement that we display in real time to the registrant the trademark owner and goods and services that is saying they have an exact match to the domain name they want to register. And the question is, how do we generate that data without discriminating it? If that requirement could be relaxed and say the registrant simply are told there's a conflict and click here to go find out who the trademark owner is, then that we're essentially not distributing data. We're simply redirecting them to a clearinghouse type of who is. And I think that solves the data abuse problem, but obviously it lacks the benefit of the fact that registrars might not click that link and might not actually take the trouble to find out who the trademark owner is. I think this is different from what you're implying here, which is, you know, the proxy idea, which is, you know, should we shield the registrar from knowing who the actual trademark owner is? I think the answer to that is no. I think they should know who the trademark owner is. But it's more of an issue of are they just display the data immediately, or are they just told, you have a conflict, click here to find out what it is. And then they just declare it out.
So there's a little bit of discussion going on in the chat room right now. Francisco is asking in the chat room whether doing a web-based lookup in real time is worse than providing data directly through the registrar registry. And the discussion here is moving fairly quickly in the chat room.
So this is Francisco. So I think James is making a very good point. If you are, the information on the clearinghouse is supposed to be available through some means to all the to every potential domain applicant. So in that sense, it's kind of, it's very difficult to protect it.
What if the public query tool did not provide a detailed information of any kind? It simply said, yes, there are problems. There are this many problems in this many jurisdictions around this, or something along those lines, something aggregated rather than aggregated rather than part of the general design. Would that go to resolve some of this? I'd like to ask James Mitchell to maybe repeat the comment he just typed into the verbal record.
James Mitchell. So I was saying that if I was an abusive person, I guess I could go through every registrar's web interface, listing as, you know, all the strings that I designed. So if, even if you did put limits in, I'll use the number of registrars and the number of TLDs to basically be able to do as many queries as I desire. So I guess to some degree, protecting this data it is, from that point of view, given a name, is impossible. However, in the other sense, I think the original issue with the abuse was if you gave all the data to the registries, they wouldn't be able to do queries by name. They'd do queries by other information to derive all the names that have been detected. So I think there's a distinction there that we need to make about what we are concerned about with abuse.
Thank you. Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I'm Yeah, obviously folks go to registrars today when they have a particular domain name they want to register and they see if it's available. And so obviously next year when they do that, they'll find out if there are claims attached to that domain name. So, you know, that's going to happen on a regular basis. It's, you know, certainly some people will try to script that and make it a systematic type of process, but, you know, that's something registrars are already designed to prevent, but in many cases, some of them might even encourage it. So I guess the question is, if given that's going to happen, I guess there are two questions. One is, why not let the clearinghouse provide that sort of query capability since they can do it anyway? But secondly, is there a way we can provide that in a way that doesn't give them all the corresponding claims information so that they're not, in fact, ending up data mining all the claims database?
I suspect the answer to that is no. And the reason why is that if we're going to provide, on an attempt to register, if we're going to, on an application to register, if you will, if we're going to provide the full claims notice mandated in the AGB, then there's nothing to stop someone from scripting mechanisms to go into various registries or various registrars and mine the data out by starting the registration process and abandoning the process somewhere, at the point where they get a claims notice, as if they were legitimate applicants who were who determined that it was inappropriate to proceed based on the trademark claims notice.
I think you're right.
Yeah, this is Francisco. I think, Bill, you make an excellent point. I don't see a way around that. If we have the requirement to show the notice to the potential registrant, there is no way to avoid this to be mined. I mean, you could have some mechanisms to, for example, rate limit or something like that, but this requirement just, I mean, as long as we have this requirement to show the notice, I don't see a way around this.
Margie?
Yes, this is Margie. And also, isn't it the case that the trademark holder would have the, if they're worried about the information being shown, they wouldn't choose to allow this information to go in there. I mean, there's some aspect of voice involved in this, right? Mm. In other words, they've consented to the use of this information.
Mm. Other caller? Other participants?
Yeah, Margie, I think you're right. I don't see a way around this. This is Tom Barrett. I'm sorry. I mean, I think you're right, but you know, at the same time, I guess we can still address their concerns of abuse by minimizing the distribution of the data. But if folks want to go to a registrar and start doing queries, then depending on what list they're working from, they might be able to find out quite a bit of information, which as we know, is all public anyway, but there's no reason we need to make it easy for them, I guess.
This is John McElwain. Is one solution to put the lookup process far enough into the registration process so that if there is not a match, the individual ends up with a domain name? That way if you're engaging in data mining, you're going to end up buying a whole lot of domain names.
Hi, John. It's Tom Barrett again. The first step for every registrar is to give a search availability. So it's you don't delay it. You don't force them to log in first. You don't force them to give a credit card. You first just find out if the name they want is available. And many places let you do a bulk search so they can cut and paste 50 or 100 names all at once and see which ones are available.
Yeah, but the way it's being done now, for instance, with .xxx, you don't get that trademark claim until after you submit, and I think maybe even, you get done with the entire process, then a claims notice is generated.
Yeah, well, XXX was not really the claims process we're trying to do here. You know, theirs runs during sunrise only, and so by definition, they had to wait for sunrise to be over before they sent out a claims notice.
Right, I'm just saying if you did it far enough through the process, that would be a way to eliminate the ability to do data mining, you would end up with a lot of domain names.
Well, yeah, I think the problem there, I'm sorry, it's Tom Barrett again, is, the value of claims, I thought, is that you gave the registrant an opportunity to change his mind before he paid for the domain name. If you wait, on our website, for example, he literally would be one mouse click away from paying for the domain name once he said, yes, I'm going to proceed. Right?
So what if you did it, though, you click proceed, and then if there was not a hit, the domain name was purchased. If there was, it said, oh, hey, before we charge your credit card, we want to let you know that there is this record out there, and the information was provided, claims notice was provided.
Paul?
Yeah.
Well, I have a question here. I'm specifically talking about trademark claim, not the sunrise. I'm a little puzzled by this lookup process, if it's going to be a layer in the process of trademark claim. Think about such a scenario. I'm a domain name applicant. I want to register, say, .lenovo is a trademark. Lenovo.home. I submit my application to the registrar, and then through the trademark claim, Lenovo, the trademark registrar, was notified. I'm, as an applicant, was notified. After this process, I guess, according to the policy of the TMCH, as a potential registrar, I should be able to access the information in TMCH database to verify whether this is a real trademark that's been verified. This is the part I understand. For the lookup process, I don't understand is that, let's say, after I'm being notified, I got a trademark claim notification and access the database, I can see, okay, Lenovo is a trademark, but I can look up the other trademark in the database. Is this the lookup process we're talking about? That's something new that has not been discussed before. Can someone explain to me? Thank you.
I think, and Karen, you can stop me if I go off the reservation any here. my understanding is that the claims notice is provided to a domain applicant prior to registration, but the notice goes to the mark holder after registration. So there's an ordering issue there. They don't occur simultaneously. They occur mark holders are only going to be notified when a domain is registered.
So this is Karen. Bill, that's correct. I was trying to make sure I understood what Hong's question was. Was that the question that you asked, Hong?
Well, this is not the question I was asking. I understand this sequence, of course. The domain name applicant was notified before the real registration of domain name. I understand that part, and I understand that trademark owner was notified first, and then the domain name applicant was notified later, and this all occurred before the registration of the domain name. What I want to know is that I'm an applicant, I'm a potential registration, I filed the application, and after all the process of notification of trademark claim, I should be able to access the database to verify this claim. I guess this is something we agree in the policy. Karen,
I think
my understanding is correct. But now we're talking about a lookup process, a searching process, a searching function. So I mean, this potential registrant can access the database and verify the claim. In addition to that, can this registrant, the potential registrant, also search the other trademark, perhaps the trademark related to the one that's been notified, or search somebody else's trademark, and search the classification, the goose jurisdiction? Well, I'm interested in this search function.
So okay, thank you. Two comments. The first is just a correction on the sequence. So the two notices to the domain name applicant and the trademark holder are not simultaneous. So the notice to the potential registrant saying, hey, there's a a record in the clearinghouse that matches this, you might want to look at this before you proceed. It's only if they do proceed, they do choose to proceed and go ahead and register that name, that the notice gets generated to the trademark holder. So the trademark holder gets the notice once the name has actually gone through and been completely registered. In terms of what we're talking about in a lookup function or how what access that domain name applicant has to go ahead and find more information, that's part of the reason we're discussing it, that is to define what those needs are and what those requirements for those functions should be. The draft claims notice that is in the applicant guidebook is, does provide, here is the mark, here is the jurisdiction and the class of goods or services and a contact. So I think it's, certainly useful to the potential registrant to know if I have questions about this, if I want to make sure this is a real notice or talk to someone or take any of those steps, that I know how to do that, that the notice is helpful to me in that way to do that. I think what you heard when it comes to, potential registrants doing research on other names or other trying to get other information about trademarks that are in the clearinghouse, I think that is where you have heard people express concern about, being able to access data on the large scale and potentially use it for undesired purposes. So, certainly we're trying to balance, giving the potential registrant enough information to make the notice helpful not creating an easy access to a whole bunch of data that can be misused. Thanks.
All right. I'm going to go ahead. It's clear we are still going to have a lot of discussion about this topic, but I'd like to go ahead and move on to some of the other areas to see if we can, and if we have time at the end, we can come back to this. One of the things that we've been working with is trying to identify the external data transactions that interact with systems that would be interacting in some way with something outside the clearinghouse. These would be probably, many of these would be mission critical in terms of the registration process and providing the critical services of the trademark clearinghouse. We came up with the following list, which is on your slides right now. The registration process of submitting of registering an agent or someone to submit records, the actual submission of records, the records reflecting a mark, and mark is being used in a broad sense to include trademarks and any other intellectual property that might be included and protected by the clearinghouse's mandatory rights protection mechanisms. So we have agent registration, submission and editing of marks, the actual eligibility check during Sunrise, the determination that a claims notice is required, that is the match saying that we have a claim, the generation of the claims notice itself, the presentation of that claims notice, whether that's via email or presented as a link or presented as an inline image or something like that within the registration process, the capture of a claims acknowledgement that the domain applicant accepts that this is it acknowledges that they were presented with this material, and then the notification of rights holders of the domain registration. All that being said, are there other critical transactions that might occur that are external in nature? Obviously, there are going to be many internal transactions, the validation transactions, the verification, authentication transactions, and things like that. But these are the externally facing transactions that are going to be interacting with clearinghouse data that we've come up with. Are there other transactions that need to be considered? Christine.
Yeah, just a thought. I'm thinking about how, you know, the different information will get into the clearinghouse. It may possibly be that the way that the trademark clearinghouse collects fees from either the trademark owners or the registries and registrars results in some sort of external data transaction as well. Separate the actual data entry.
I kind of lumped that in because it's not really a trademark data issue. It's more of a payment data issue. And payment data is pretty well understood.
Okay, I wasn't clear that this was only relating to trademark data, so that helps a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom?
Yes, Tom Barrett. To that point, I think if the billable event, for example, during Sunrise is a registration, then that's a transaction you probably want to track, as opposed to if the billable event is just the eligibility check, then maybe we're done. So I guess it is kind of tied to what the billable events are between the clearinghouse and its third parties.
Good point. Other comments or questions? There's still an awful lot of chatter in the chat room. It appears to be about the previous issue. I'd like us to get through at least looking at the next slide. And if we need to go back to the previous issue, we will. So on data protocols, before I move on, it appears that Tom and Hong are having a little bit of a discussion in the chat room. And I will amplify what Tom said. Yeah. The third item was a check, not necessarily the actual registration. There is going to have to be an additional piece in that list. So going back to data protocols, the consensus appears in the previous discussion appears to be that the protocols chosen should be cost and time effective to be implemented by registries and registrars and by the clearinghouse operator, and that those protocols should provide for adequate performance and availability under anticipated loads. There hasn't been not a whole lot of strong feelings have been expressed from the mark holder community about what protocol should be used. The various the registries and registrars seem to be interested in centering in on some of the more traditional, well understood protocols that they're used to using. One of the questions we'd like to consider is, are there protocol choices we could make that would help to address mark holder concerns about access to and location of marked data? And are there other protocol discussion points we should be making at this point? If I could get just a show of agreement with the following statement, should we be moving back to data access at this point in time? If you could just use your status to agree if we should go back to data access at this point. That's the same place you raise your hand. All right, then let's go ahead and three people with many abstentions. Let's go ahead and move back to discussing data access. Data location. So let's continue the discussion. I know people have very strong feelings about this. What would you like to add to the discussion at this point?
James Mitchell, I put my hand up in agreement, not because I feel like we're going to get a solution now, and I think we're going to get far from it, but I just went back to basically clarify, I guess, where we're at. As to direct, you know, further communications on the mailing list, et cetera.
I'm sorry, that distorted on my line. I didn't understand what was said.
Sorry. I just basically put my hand up to, I guess, get an idea of where we're at and where we think the path forward is, just to direct, you know, communications at the mailing list.
Okay. What are the other feelings on that? Or thoughts?
So I'll jump in again, James. So is it safe to assume that the current line of thinking is that we don't want registries or registrars to have full information of marks and the associated, you know, holder information, mark holder information, and that we still want the potential registrants to be able to get access to the mark holder information. Is that sort of summarized, I guess, where we were at?
That was my understanding of where we were at.
Cool. Yeah, then I'm done. I'm happy to go ahead to protocols when you're ready.
Tom?
Yeah, I'm wondering if that description includes the possibility that the actual claims notice is not displayed to the registrant before the registration, but basically they're given a means to retrieve the information via a link or some other process.
So
I mean, the applicant guidebook actually has a sample claims notice that implies that we actually display that during the registration process. Are we now saying perhaps we can relax that requirement and simply tell the registrant, hey, there's a problem, before you continue, you might want to click on this link and do some queries to find out if you want to continue?
So, Margie, what do you have to say?
Hi, it's Margie. Yeah, I'm just trying to think through this issue of the information being available on all the records. And one of the thoughts that came to me was, is it a solution if we were to allow the trademark holders to opt in to the trademark clearinghouse notice? So, in other words, obviously it's a requirement on registries that they have to provide trademark claims notices. But there's no obligation that a trademark holder has to take advantage of that right. And so if they have a problem with the fact that, you know, if it's provided that the registrant would have access to all this information, maybe we could build in a function that would allow them to opt in and choose perhaps not to have the trademark clearinghouse notices, the claims notices go to the potential registrants if they have a problem with the data issue.
And I missed Will in the queue, and I'd like to get back to him.
Yeah, this is Will Shorter. I think it's a great idea, Margie. I think that, you know, might help those that have an issue with this. The only thing, I was going to add is that, if we're going to have parties that have access to this data, giving them a username and password, authenticating them, tracking what their activity looks like, and, you know, defining what's abusive, what's not abusive, to me is a way to control any potential issues. So I think that could be another solution. As far as data getting out of sync or a lag, you know, that's always going to occur. You can't really get around that. I mean, you can reduce it to a certain point, but you're always going to have some kind of lag when you're talking about data synchronization. That's all. Thank you.
Margie?
I just wanted to recognize Tom Scott. Maybe that is an option. He mentioned that maybe you could have trademark holders choose whether they want to have a thick or thin claims notice. In other words, whether they're, you know, the claims notice has extensive information or not. I don't know. I mean, that might be it. Promising approach. What do the rest of you think of that?
Are there any thoughts on whether or not on the idea of creating what we'll call thick and thin claims notices, where a thin claims notice would not provide information, and in fact might be a self registration of some kind, a self listing. Yes, Karen.
Well, I was just, thinking back to some of the discussions in the community in talking about in developing the claims service and process and what it was intended to achieve. I think there may be a little bit of a concern about, the potential registrant. How do I say this? So, if for example, a particular trademark is limited to a particular class of goods or services, then that actually could be important information for the registrant to know to determine whether, that what they're planning on doing is infringing or not, or to have some indication of that. So I guess that's just a consideration in the thin versus thick. Yeah.
Tom?
Yeah, I think Karen makes a good point. A trademark is only valid in a particular class. It's not a right for stringing across all uses and industries. So by allowing a thin type of notice, you might, certainly trademark owners will try to say they claim the rights to that string across all possible uses when in fact they don't have rights that way.
Okay. Hong? Or are you agreeing?
Hi, James Mitchell here. So the thick or thin registry style idea is good if that helps meet, I guess, people's concern for privacy. Without prescribing thick or thin, you could potentially allow the trademark clearinghouse to provide such a service, like a privacy proxy registration style service, and thus, have potentially another avenue for, recuperating some money for the service. Of concern, though, is for private sort of style, sin style marks, is the ability to base something in there and hide it. I don't think we need to go into discussion about how we're going to make it all visible now. But as a potential registrant, I mean, I can't necessarily guarantee the accuracy or whatever of that mark. And I don't know if that's the intention, but that might be a concern.
Right. Tom?
No, my hand was up by mistake, sorry.
Okay. I think we've certainly, the idea of thick and thin, we're going to have to noodle on a little bit and figure out what the pros and cons really are. Are there other comments people would like to bring into the data location area? Are there any final comments individuals would like to bring in on the access issue in general? are there any comments that people would like to make on the nature of the external data transactions we've enumerated? And specifically, we're interested in, are there other critical transactions we've missed outside the ones that have already been mentioned? Then let's go back to protocols. Specifically, we've had some discussions about using DNS to distribute a list of strings that would match for claim service. We've also discussed using EPP for doing the Sunrise service. And we've discussed a variety of mechanisms, whether it's email or embedded web or something Whois-like or something something EPP-like to provide the claims notice data. Are there other ideas Tom, your statement about billable transactions is about the previous slide, about transactions?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Are there other ideas or observations about protocols? All right. So we're going to probably need to put some thought and provide some new discussion questions for the next call based on what we discussed today. At this point, our next call is scheduled for 1600 UTC on 10 February 2012. We'll continue to accept comments on all the T-Series questions until end of the day on 8 February UTC for any comments we might put into to prepare for the call. Please do not resubmit prior comments, only send new recommendations. At this point, are there any other comments we need to include in today's call? Then I expect that you will hear from us with additional information on these issues prior to the call on 10 February. And I'd like to thank you very much for your time and your attention this afternoon, evening, morning. Thank you very much. Oh, and especially those who got up early or stayed late. And a late Happy New Year to all our friends.
Yes, Year of the Dragon.
Yes, Year of the Dragon. And the next call is in just under 4 hours for the process call. Thank you again very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Left.